Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C, this is Agriculture Today.
When we're talking about the heifers on feed and where we're going, I think you're exactly right. I mean, La Nina, our climatologists continue to tell us that we're in a La Nina, so I think that's going to have an effect. And then the other effect that you got to look at is if you're a rancher, you got to look at yourself in the mirror and go, man, we got the highest price we've ever had. Am I going to keep that heifer or am I going to sell that heifer?
Brady Miller, Director of Markets, Membership, and Education with Texas Cattle Feeders.
If I was asking myself that in the mirror today, it would be pretty dang tough not to send that heifer to market. So I think, as you said, I think you're exactly right. I can sit here and tell you what the data has looked like for the last couple months. Now, that could change super quick as we move forward when we're seeing these record large prices.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
We had a great talk with Mexico.
Just one day in front of tariffs going into effect on Canada and Mexico, President Trump from the Oval Office.
We had President Sheinbaum is a woman. I like her very much, and we've had good relationships, but we have to stop fentanyl from coming in, whether I like somebody or not, and we have to stop the illegal aliens from coming in. I think we've lost 200,000 people on average a year for many years, much higher than the 100,000. It could be even closer to 300,000. And they've agreed to put in 10,000 soldiers permanently, like forever, 10,000 soldiers at their side of the border and stop fentanyl and illegal aliens from coming into our country. They have a big incentive to do. Other than that, we've agreed to talk and consider various other things. We haven't agreed on tariffs yet, and maybe we will, maybe we won't. But we have a very good relationship. I also spoke with Prime Minister Trudeau of Canada, and we had a good talk in the morning, but I did ask him a couple of questions, like, you know, banks aren't allowed to do business in Canada. Canada is very tough. Canada is very, you know, we're not treated well by Canada, and we have to be treated well. Banks are not, as an example, allowed. Did you know that? The banks, American banks, are not allowed to do business in Canada. Can you believe that? And that's one of many things that we talked about, and I think we'll win most of the subjects. But for some reason, a lot of things have been very unfair with Canada. I noticed that in the first term. You deal with people, and after a while, you begin to realize, like you learned, that Larry Ellison's very tough to do business with, okay? He's a very tough guy. I mean, I'm sure you're shocked to hear that. But Canada is very tough. They're very, very tough to do business with, and we can't let them take advantage of the U.S. They don't take our agricultural product for the most part. They don't take our cars. They make cars, but they basically don't take our cars. And, you know, we don't need, and look, I think we're going to have another good conversation today. We're actually speaking at 3 o'clock again. But we don't need them to make our cars. We don't need them to give us lumber. We don't need them for agricultural products because we have all the agriculture we need. They don't take our agricultural product for the most part, our milk and dairy, et cetera. A little bit they do, but not much. We take theirs. And as far as cars are concerned, they took in a big percentage, almost 19% of the market. And, you know, I wouldn't mind making our cars in the United States. So we have a problem there. I'd like to make our cars in the U.S. We don't need Canada to make our cars. With that being said, we're going to have another call at 3 o'clock. We had a call this morning. It was a pretty good call, I'd say. So the call with Mexico went very well in the sense that they're very strong now on the border. They're going to put soldiers there. So, actually, they're best military soldiers, and they're going to be at the border, 10,000. That's a lot of soldiers. And they want to protect it also. You know, they don't want people running through Mexico, coming through Mexico to come into our country. So they're going to do that. And then we're going to talk about other things over the next, and we're going to have, over the next 30 days, we're going to have Scott, Howard, and Marco Rubio, Secretary of State, lead the delegation, and we're going to have a big negotiation with Mexico. I'll be involved, too, and President Sheinbaum will be involved to see whether or not we can work something out on the tariffs.
Originally, 25% on Canada, Mexico, and 10% on China.
That was just an opening salvo. If we can't make a deal with China, then the tariffs will be very, very substantial.
China hitting back with 15% tariffs on coal and LNG, 10% tariffs on crude, large engine cars, and farm equipment. It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
2024 is an era of generational change.
Corey Geiger is lead dairy economist at the Knowledge Exchange Division for Cobank.
I just came back from the International Dairy Foods Association's Dairy Forum that had processors, dairy processors from across the United States and around the world. There's a lot of optimism about the U.S. dairy industry. There's $8 billion of plant investment. Over half of that's in cheese. And of course, when you make cheese, you get whey. And whey, the proteins found in whey, are the most complete amino acids known to humanity. So a lot of the work in the cheese facilities are also to make whey proteins. And with the weight loss drugs becoming more and more popular with Americans, the whey protein is in extremely high demand. We were talking to some processors that pretty much have second quarter sold out. So that was one of the big themes from Dairy Forum.
You may have heard of class 1, class 2, class 3. What are these different classes of milk?
Class 3 is the largest class of milk, and it is cheese and whey. And I always tell people, we think of a nursery rhyme, Little Miss Tuffet sat on her muffet eating her curds and whey. Curds and whey are all of class 3. Class 4 is butter and dry milk powders. Butter is coming back in a big way. In fact, 2024 will end the year, and butter production in the United States will be historic number, highest ever, and that's breaking a 77-year, going back, that's how long the record was. And certainly dry milk powders, non-fat dry milk, is a key export. We export half the product throughout the to countries around the world. So those are class 3 and 4. Class 1 is beverage milk. It's what you drink. And then class 2 is all the soft products. Think ice cream, yogurt, cottage cheese would be in there because it's a softer cheese. Those would be some of the, and the creamers that you would see in coffee.
So we know what the changes in 2024 were, but looking back over the last 20 years.
The United States dairy industry has changed quite a bit. 90% of the milk these days is what people in the industry would call MCP, multiple component pricing. The two biggest components going into manufacturing are butterfat and protein, and they make up 90% of the milk check. And with 80% of all farm milk going to manufactured products, this is so important. And there's been some processors in recent years that have had base programs. If you have a base program, that means they aren't really allowing farmers to ship more milk. However, a big, big however, Tony, there's no base programs on butterfat pounds and protein pounds. And that's really what manufacturers are looking for when it comes to cheese and butter and whey and those kind of products. For the last 3 years, U.S. milk production has been flat. And in fact, 2023 and 2024 is the first two-year time span since 1969 that milk production has been down in this country. Very generational in that regard. However, during that time, butterfat and protein pounds have been up 1 to 1.5%. So that means farmers are shipping more protein, more butterfat, which consumers are craving. They're eating their dairy more than drinking it these days. So that's the big driver from dairy farms to dairy processors and to consumers.
Corey Geiger with Cobank. It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Overall, if there's an underlying quiet issue happening out in the gray markets, it has to do with dry conditions in parts of Argentina and southern Brazil.
Dr. Dan O'Brien is a Kansas State grain economist.
And some wet conditions that have delayed harvest of soybeans elsewhere, in Brazil in particular. Those delays in soybeans being harvested are also delaying the planting dates for their second crop corn. So that's at issue. We have, if you go online and look at the weather maps that we put together for our KSU Ag Today market information on the Ag Manager website, you can see, gosh, it's pretty dry in parts of Brazil and Argentina. And we're not talking about La Nina very much here, but analysts down in that area are saying that are really talking about, or I guess putting the blame for this, for what's occurring on the remnants of La Nina. So we'll see. We're supposedly in kind of a neutral or weaker La Nina, but and not a lot of talk about how that could affect the U.S., but it's still having an impact down South America. And in the Black Sea region, you get conflicting reports out of Russia, which isn't surprising with regard to the grain markets. But on the one hand, I've seen a credible article talking about how Russia may lose world leadership in wheat exports, and that grain exports are to drop 20% in 24-25 due to bad weather. Then in the next breath, almost on the next day, you see, gosh, more than 80% of the wheat is good to excellent. Well, it's hard to really pull this apart in terms of what's being said, but it might be framing, positioning in the markets and a difference of opinions. But either way, there's enough, quote, smoke there that problems in that part of the world are at play to probably help give us some of this price increase that we've seen in the wheat market. And again, we had a week for hard red winter wheat. We mentioned that a little bit earlier. 6 million bushels of shipments. We need about 5.1 million to meet the USDA's projection. And this is about the first week in a good long time, in months, that we've actually had such a strong week of hard red winter wheat movement, actual shipments. So for hard red right now, we've got, here we're 34 weeks into this market here, about 65% of the way. And we actually have shipments and sales at about 74% of the way to this 210 million bushel goal that the USDA set. So we've been bemoaning the hard red winter wheat market in the United States and in Kansas in particular for a good long time. And now, I guess if you wait long enough, that again, international conditions come into play and start to bring buyers back to the U.S. And again, the issue with the U.S. is that we can store wheat. We can finance the storage. We can ship it better than many other countries. We're not under the gun or under pressure to have to sell it quick to generate cash. So we can hold this at interest cost. And when these other places that do have to have quick forced sales start to run out of supplies, then here's the United States. It's a matter of, though, if being patient enough or being forced to be patient enough to wait for the situation every 1 or 2 or 3 years where we end up in our residual storer status and can take advantage of it. So we'll see where it goes in coming weeks and months. But right now it looks like things are turning a bit towards the U.S. favor on wheat exports.
Kansas State grain economist, Dr. Dan O'Brien. I'm Tony St. James. This is Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
Well, we have massive deficits with the European Union.
From the Oval Office on Monday, President Donald Trump.
Massive, like $350 billion, if you can believe it. They don't take our farm product. They don't take our cars. They don't take almost anything, but we take their cars. We have millions of cars coming in, BMW and Mercedes-Benz and Volkswagen and just so many different cars, and we don't do anything about that, and we don't charge them tariffs. They make it impossible to sell cars in the European Union. They make it very difficult, agricultural product. They actually don't take it, and they have a lot of excuses. Some of them are the pesticides and the different chemicals used, and Bobby Kennedy actually is looking at that very, very seriously. Because maybe it's not necessary to use all of that. You know, we want to be the healthiest country, and we're not. We spend more money on food than anybody else in terms of its creation, but we're not the healthiest country. So maybe there is something to the fact that we shouldn't be using so much chemical, and maybe that'll stop. But Bobby Kennedy is the one, because he is not a believer in all of the things we have done, and neither are the Europeans. So we'll see what happens. But they use it as an excuse not to buy our product. I asked a couple of the leaders, I don't want to use names, but how many Chevrolets or Fords do you see in the middle of Munich? And the answer is none, because they don't take any cars. They don't take anything. So the European has abused the United States for years, and they can't do that. And they want to make a deal. Let me tell you, in all cases, they all want to make deals. There's nobody that doesn't want to make deals. They've been abusers. And they want to make deals, so we'll see about that. But we'll have, I think, some very fair. All we want is a fair deal. And, you know, there's a word reciprocal. I'd go right now, reciprocal tariffs on everybody, because many of the countries that you feel so horrible about, the way they're being treated by Trump, you're saying, oh, President Trump is so terrible to them. Well, they charge us tariffs. European Union has a VAT tax, which is through the roof, okay? It's a similar thing, similar to a tariff. It's a VAT. And they have it, and it's numbers like you wouldn't believe. And Canada, I told you about the banks, and I told you they charge us. And people don't say that. They don't like to say it. Just like they don't like to say that I opened up the water for California. It's a great thing. It's too bad they didn't do it themselves. I had to do it, and it was not easy. We did it a very rough way. And I didn't like to do it a rough way. We shouldn't have to do it a rough way. But a lot of these countries that we're talking about, you know, they're so-called allies, but they don't treat us well.
He does say when it comes to the individual nations making up the European Union, they want trade deals.
Every single one of those countries is dying to make a deal. You know why? Because they're ripping us off really badly. And the United States is tired of being ripped off. And that's why we have $36 trillion in debt. We have it for a reason, because we make bad deals with everybody. And we don't allow that anymore. So the Wall Street Journal is wrong because, very simply, every single country that you're writing about right now is dying to make a deal, because the deals they have right now are so good, and so good for them, and so profitable for them. You didn't know that Canada didn't allow our banks. You didn't know all of these different things. And I think in the end, you're going to see that either very, very substantial tariffs are going to be paid by them, or they're going to make some kind of a deal.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
Well, the pulse of the dairy industry at this point in time, we were looking at a little more supportive to that market just a couple of weeks ago, but the unprecedented volatility in the cheese market and demand being about 0.5% slower, and then the perception on what tariffs could do really kind of knocked the support out under that market.
Robin Schmall is dairy division lead for JSA, looking at the pulse of the dairy industry.
So we might be looking at something a little bit less as far as an average price than what we were looking at maybe about 3 weeks ago.
Schmall has seen quite a bit in his time. What kind of changes over the past 20 years?
Pretty incredible because of technology, for one, but a lot more consolidation. We've seen a lot of the smaller farms kind of going out of business, and some of that's because of retirement. There's a lot of farmers, dairy farmers, up into that retirement age. The second generation doesn't want to take over, but they are being absorbed by the larger producers. So we're seeing continued growth as far as sizes per farm. And that's not just relation to region. That's happening all over the place. And so even though we've lost a lot of farms, we've actually maintained cow numbers. They're just getting larger. And even with this year, with high heifer prices, tight supplies, we are seeing some expansion still going forward.
In addition to the latest cattle inventory numbers, we picked up dairy inventory numbers as well.
Well, looking at the dairy inventory numbers on the last report, the number of milk cows was pretty much in line with last year, just a little bit higher. The big deal was in the heifer replacements. They were at 3.91 million head. That was down 1% from a year ago. But the ratio of heifer replacements to milk cows was at 39.1%. That's the tightest ratio we've ever had between dairy replacements and milk cows.
And then there's something known as beef on dairy.
Well, the beef on dairy equation but between the two, the whole cattle inventory overall, beef side and the dairy side. On the dairy side, it's really tightened those heifer numbers, because most farms have been breeding about 50% beef on dairy, and then 50% on sex semen or for the replacements. Now, when they're getting $800 to $1,000 for a calf, They don't have to cull quite as heavily, but it's really lucrative. So they're going to continue to do that as long as we have these high prices. Now, on the whole beef side in general, it's adding a lot of beef into the system that's really helping a lot of these feedlots out, being able to get these calves, being able to get these feeders and feed them out. And when we're looking at some of that inventory report that we saw on Friday, we're not seeing the whole beef herd in general. The smaller the replacements on the beef side were down 1%. Now we're looking at, if we're going to start growing, we got to look at least a 2-year process here. So that whole equation put together is really a support to the market and could be a multiple year support.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
We have some issues happening in the world markets. We've been talking about South America for the most part with regard to corn and soybean impacts.
Dr. Dan O'Brien is a Kansas State grain economist.
But there are concerns in other parts of the world that are affecting the wheat markets as well. I would say that in the last few days, if any of these commodities has moved to the higher side since we spoke last a week ago, it's probably been wheat. And in a way, wheat's been struggling so much that's been it's kind of a surprise. Some of that comes back to really a strong week of exports. So I guess if prices on a commodity like wheat in the U.S. move low enough, it'll attract buyers. And it did. You can see that in the hard red winter wheat export numbers, as well as the, especially the hard red numbers and hard red winter numbers. So that's a welcome sight for Kansas wheat growers to see the commodity start to move in the area.
What about cash prices?
Some surprising things that, and when I looked first at the ethanol markets, ever since we've been talking about the gray market, Shelby, on this program, we've said, well, gosh, it seems like Kansas is always has the strongest price for corn going into ethanol plants. And that other than one week, I think that you and I have talked about this, we'd seen that occur. Well, now you've got a situation where in the Eastern Corn Belt, you actually have stronger prices in Ohio than you have in Kansas. Average price, well, price range of 487 to 504, in Kansas, 479 to 502. So top end price is a little bit higher. Average price, 493 in Kansas, 496, 497 in Ohio. You look at the weather maps, it's dry in Ohio. So I don't know if that's necessarily the issue that's driving that. Of course, it's an ethanol-driven bid, so we have to look probably closer at the ethanol prices back in that part of the country as well. But I don't know if correlation makes for causality, but there are parts of the Eastern Corn Belt that are just pretty dry. And that probably could play into the psychology of those of the bids that are occurring. Would also say here in Kansas, we've watched for a long time the corn basis in Southwest Kansas as the bellwether of the state, and it continues to weaken. The cash price of 505, which isn't necessarily bad, but that's only a 15 over basis, and we've been seeing 20 in recent weeks, 40, 45, 50 in most of the time last few years. In the driest of years, 2-3 years ago, we saw a dollar plus $1.60, et cetera. So now we're down to about 15 over, and that's a change. And either due to this issue of everybody being full up on the one hand, or the affordability of wheat as a competitor in livestock feed rations, and you still have a ratio of wheat prices to cash wheat price to cash corn price. They're in Garden City with the cash wheat at 518, corn at 508. So you have wheat only 3% over that of corn. For the cash price in that area. And of course, we can feed it down there. It's got the cattle, got the livestock to do that. And normally we look at 105, 106% as the break even. It wasn't 2 or 3 weeks ago that price ratio was more like 96% or 97. So you could see some wheat demand in that local area coming in and starting to move that more towards a neutral situation. But I guess that's the way markets work, that when we have an opportunity to buy something at a good value, we tend to see demand come towards it and then tend to take that opportunity away. So we'll see where that goes in coming weeks.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
Not only is agritourism as an industry growing, so is data to better recognize and understand this sector of agriculture and its trends. Audrey Comerford of Oregon State University Extension notes recent data associated with USDA's 2022 Census of Agriculture.
1.9 million U.S. farms were estimated to basically report 1.5% reported themselves being engaged in some sort of agritourism and 6% of direct-to-consumer sales.
Agritourism operations were reported in 57% of the nation's counties in the most recent census, with almost 50% of that total originating from just four states, California, Texas, Colorado, and Hawaii. And what they generated in income was over one quarter of the $1.26 billion, with a B, dollars in agritourism sales nationally in 2022. I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.